This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
My patients, their families, and even some of my coworkers are growing worried and fearful about being able to afford their health care.
Today, House Democrats will introduce legislation to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits for 3 years.
The Senate is expected to vote Thursday on a Democratic proposal to extend Affordable Care Act subsidies.
We need to think about the human cost of this, I think, and Republicans need to offer an alternative solution.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Dan Tucker in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Around for a breakdown of the top local stories of the day. But first, the U.S. Senate is set to vote today on a Democratic bill that would extend Affordable Care Act subsidies for 3 years. Republicans are not expected to support the measure, and instead are introducing a bill focused on health savings accounts. Right now, it looks like ACA subsidies will expire at the end of the year. That would cause monthly health care premiums to more than double for 24 million Americans. That includes about 500,000 in Illinois. To learn more about the impact on Illinois residents, I spoke with Rebecca George. She's the owner of Volumes Book Cafe in Wicker Park. She and her sister, who's co-owner of the store, both have ACA plans with subsidies. Also with us was Crystal Abel, executive director of the Illinois Alliance for Retired Americans. Around a quarter of all ACA enrollees in Illinois are above the age of 55. Rebecca starts us off by sharing what's going through her mind with the deadline to extend subsidies right around the corner.
A lot of things. I've already met with some of my doctors to say, okay, let's look at what this happens. You know, I take medication. I'm type 2 diabetic. I can't go cold turkey.
Yeah.
So what's the plan if I have to cancel my insurance? My insurance, not only did it go up by $400, but $400 beyond that. So if I did have the tax subsidy, now it would be $800. It doesn't really make sense, but like through Get Covered Illinois, I looked at it. It used to be $800 total, and then I pay like $390 something around there. And just looking at it yesterday, it went up to $1,200.
Oh my God.
Same benefits. And then if I had a $400 tax credit, so $790 per month.
Yeah.
That's before my deductible, before any copay. So if you add the medicine that I would need, you're talking about actually kind of close to $1,200 total per month just for me to like walk and talk and exist in the earth.
You know? Yeah. And this has obviously been a big news story recently with the government shutdown revolving around whether Democrats would do something or Congress would do something on this. They did not. Of course, the shutdown ended without a plan. I'm just wondering, you know, from your perspective, when did you start to realize that you might be affected by this? Is this something you've been thinking about for a long time or just in the last few months here?
Well, I've been thinking about it. I mean, you know, for the last 10 years that we've been in business, paying out of pocket for our insurance and trying a lot of different things. My priority actually has always been for my sister to be insured. She's had an autoimmune disease since she was young, and we knew, I thought that's the priority.
Yeah.
And as I got older, I thought, you know what, I should probably start paying attention to my own healthcare. Beyond, you know, going to a clinic as needed. And it's been a struggle. Just even this last year, $400 a month, you know, when you're not making a whole lot and most of your money just goes back into your business. Both of us we had to make a decision. And one of the decisions is that, we're closing in the new year.
And yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And that factored into it is like, you know, I'm at an age now where like that my health needs to be a priority and I can't keep you know, walking this line.
Yeah, I want to give people a little bit more context there. Volumes Book Cafe is in Wicker Park on Milwaukee. And just, I think it was about a year ago, because I live not too far from there, big Barnes & Noble opened up. And my immediate thought was, what is this going to mean for your store, for Quimby's on North Avenue, and for Myopic Books?
Right.
Tell us a little bit about how being a small business owner in that environment has played into this.
Sure. Well, luckily for, you know, Myopic and Quimby's are very different business models when it comes to books. Very different from Barnes. You know, we're competing on the same books with Barnes.
Yeah.
Whereas they're not necessarily, you know, used books. It'd be like having a used clothing store versus The Gap. You know, those two things are very different. Not that I'm The Gap, but you know.
Sure.
And Quimby's, that's a lot of stuff on consignment and whatnot. What they're doing is very different as well. So we were very concerned when we heard they were coming, and they opened up just a month before the holiday season, and we saw a dramatic shift pretty quickly. Maybe not so much with our loyal customers, but the type of people who would find you. We saw people walking in with big bags of Barnes & Noble stuff at Christmas time, and our sales were immediately down about at least 20%. We thought that would be a fluke. And then as the new year came in, that stayed pretty consistent. When we had just been going up, you know,
yeah.
Like any good for a small business.
And you'd been open for about a decade or how
Yeah,
long?
For about a decade, yeah. And, you know, any good business you're looking at, literally I have a spreadsheet of every single day we've ever been in business. And I can look at what we did last, the same week last year, or the year before that, and then make, you know, a pretty good guess of what we're going to be doing in the month ahead. And, you know, every year goes up about 10%, something around there. And it just, you know, yeah. It just declined rapidly. And that is not on the fault of our loyal customers at all. It's just, I think, a mindset of, you know, we had a number of people coming in and saying, spending 20 minutes with us, and we give them a bunch of recommendations, and then saying, well, it's 20% off down the street. You know, what's my time worth? I don't know. But I don't think everyone is a indie bookstore person, and it's really hard to kind of get that mentality. But
yeah, and I want to get into a little bit of, you know, how all this affects budgeting and your plan for the future in a minute. But let me bring in Crystal here. Crystal, let me just throw a fact at you here. Average monthly healthcare premiums are set to go up 119%. That's for the average person on the Affordable Care Act if these subsidies do expire. Just tell us a little bit about your reaction to that.
Well, my reaction to that is, you know, the same as everyone else's. It's shocking. It's not affordable. You know, we call this the Affordable Care Act plan, yet costs continue to rise. For myself, when I first got on an Affordable Care Act plan was in 2023, and I was only paying $260 a month for myself and three kids. I thought that was pretty reasonable, but then I got a second job in May of this year, and my income went a little higher, and all of a sudden, my Affordable Care Act plan went up to $800 a month with the dental included, and that all happened, you know, overnight, it seemed, and now here we are 7 months, you know, later, and that plan, similarly to Rebecca, is going to be over $1,500 a month. And so I started looking into the Illinois Affordable Care Act plans and that recently opened, and had to start making really tough decisions. I had to choose between investing in my pension account that I get through my other job that I have. And I chose to not enroll in the pension plan so that I could put that money towards my premium costs instead. And now my daughter just turned 18 in October. So we are looking at, you know, me not being able to claim her as a dependent anymore. So she can go get Medicaid and come off of my insurance just to be able to afford it. So, you know, here in Illinois, just for my other two kids, the Affordable Care Act plan that I'm going to have through Illinois is, you know, just under $1,200 a month. And that's only to insure half my family. I won't be insured under that plan, and neither will my daughter. And my youngest son is 100% disabled. He goes to a multitude of therapy services, and the co-pays for those are very expensive. We're spending about $200 every week on his treatment, which brings my total healthcare cost to over $2,000 a month if there's no premium tax credits anymore. So we've already had to face some hard decisions in our family, and we may be facing more here in January if we can't find relief for families like mine.
Do you find yourself thinking about choosing a plan that has less coverage just because the price is lower? Like how is that coming into your mind about which plan to choose at this point?
At this point, I'm really trying to weigh how much the coverage is going to be when it comes to my disabled son. His needs are huge. And I have to make sure that I'm going to be able to afford the insurance plus all the different co-pays that go with that. So I've been working with his providers to find out more information about what coverage he could have. You know, we're a little bit worried about suspending services because, you know, if we have a gap in coverage where we can't figure out the right plan for him to be on, his services will be interrupted and have to go through a lot of headache with that as well. So he has autism level 3, and getting him off his routine or having to change providers can be very traumatic for him. He really relies on his routine and being with people that he knows and has developed a relationship with. So that is my, you know, greatest concern going into the new year.
Yeah, a lot of the coverage of this, I think, you know, you can understand why it does focus on how much more per month a family will have to pay. But you're really getting into another thing I wanted to ask about, which is what effects could this have on people's health, on their well-being, on their mental health? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. You know, it's been really stressful for our family, especially when it comes to my own mental health and the stress levels that I'm seeing in myself. I'm a single mom. I'm working two jobs. My oldest daughter, who's now getting moved off to Medicaid, also has some extensive mental health treatment needs. And I'm really worried about how I'm going to, you know, manage continuing to stay at the income level that I have with two jobs, but being able to manage their healthcare needs as well. And it's really a sad thing to think about as soon as someone finally reaches, you know, what middle class status could be considered. The cost of living goes up so incredibly high because you don't qualify for certain tax credits or social programs anymore. It really kind of immediately kicks you out of that middle class that we're told is the American dream. And it can make you feel like a failure. You know, no matter how hard you work, you're still stuck in the same position.
Rebecca, let me ask you a similar question. You talked a little bit about, you know, you're more worried about your sister, which is, you know, I think what a lot of great siblings would think. How do you think this could affect her health, your health, your mental health?
I mean, for both of us, yeah, we've looked into other plans too, and it's, I mean, I've already had to get rid of doctors to get onto the plan that I'm on. For her, I mean, she has a great deal of not just medications, but testing that she has to do, blood testing, all sorts of different things to make sure, you know, that the side effects from medication aren't affecting her. And yeah, I think both of us are suffering from a lot of anxiety. I haven't been on anxiety medicine in probably 20 years, and I recently got on anti-anxiety medicine because, you know, because of this. Yeah, it's
largely,
like I'm losing sleep over what's going to happen in the new year. And yeah, the fact that I have to change my, I'm changing my entire career trajectory, all those things.
Yeah, what is your plan? So you're closing the bookshop at the end of the year as part of this discussion.
Early in the new year.
Yeah. And then what's next for you then?
I don't know what I want to be when I grow up.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know. Something that has health insurance.
That your primary
thought
right
now? That's my primary focus right now. Yeah, is, you know, sure, I'd want to wait for the perfect job, but I don't think I can do that for months and months.
Yeah,
on
because
end.
In this country, you need employer-supported health insurance to really have it be anywhere near affordable, it seems, lately.
Right. And on top of that, I feel like I've already been looking at jobs and I'm either considered a way overqualified or way underqualified.
Isn't it terrible when they say you're overqualified? It's like, what do you mean?
Yeah. I'm not really sure. I hope something pops up, but you know, I'm also have the anxiety of closing a business after 10 years mm-hmm. and everything that goes with that. Selling 10 years worth of stuff is, you know, is stressful.
Let me ask you this. You know, if you look out 3 or 6 months, where do you want to be? And maybe on the flip side, what's your biggest fear?
My biggest fear is this directly affecting my health and my sister's and our ability to like live. Are we going to have to give up our home? Are we going to have to give up, you know, like, am I going to get evicted from my apartment? Am I going to have to, you know, what am I going to do? Yeah, there's a lot of factors there. Do I prioritize my healthcare is where any money is going? Or do I prioritize the ability to eat?
Wow.
You know, get groceries. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Crystal, how are you planning financially for this? You mentioned that, you know, the plan might go up to $1,500 a month. I mean, that's sort of eye-popping for an amount for the average family to pay for health insurance.
Right now, we're just trying to save as much money as possible. We usually take a little family trip during Christmas every year instead of buying presents, and we're not going to do a trip this year. My daughter is going to be graduating high school this semester, and she's relying on me to help her pay for college. So she's going to go to community college next semester and probably the next 2 years so that that's more affordable for us. So the choices and financial impacts of that are also, you know, affecting my daughter's future and what she wants to do and the options that are available to her, because mom just can't afford to help her pay for college and living expenses if she goes to college somewhere out of town where I can't, you know, be here to support her living situation and paying for college for her. So right now we're just trying to save. I've already cut, you know, as much as I feel like I can cut, having to choose between a retirement plan and an insurance plan and choosing the healthcare. So we're just trying to save as much as possible. And my biggest fear right now is that we have a federal administration that has been very open about the fact that they would rather just do away with Affordable Care Act completely. And so that's where I feel the next steps could go. And after that, I really don't know what our options would be if the only option we had to us was a private insurance plan bought directly through the insurance agency.
And what's your message to the federal administration that you just mentioned, or maybe to lawmakers from either party who, you know, they're going to be voting on two separate bills today? It sounds like neither will pass. Even the Republican plan does not seem to have the support that it needs at this point. And there's been a lot of different Republican plans floated. But what is your message to lawmakers or perhaps the president?
I would say that my message is that our legislators, you know, especially in Illinois, they're doing a great job focusing on how these things are going to impact people now. But they need to think about the generational impact that these healthcare costs are going to have. We know that the senior population in Illinois is rising faster than the birth rate. The federal government, you know, is coming up with all these Trump accounts and ways to get families to have more children. And the way we can do that is by making the cost of living more affordable. We need affordable healthcare, affordable housing, affordable groceries. Affordability is not a hoax from the Democratic Party. It is a real thing that people care about. And not being able to afford the lives we currently have will make our children and grandchildren not be able to afford their lives as well and be stuck in cycles of poverty. So if we want to fix that, which we have to do, it starts with being able to afford health care.
And Rebecca, as we wrap up here, as I mentioned, Monday is the deadline to choose a plan. Have you chosen a specific plan yet? What else will you be doing between now, Thursday, and Monday on the 15th?
A lot of things. My plan re-enrolled this year, so now I just have this cancel button kind of living in front of me. And like I've looked into other plans, and even those cheaper plans have higher deductibles. And when you do the math, it's about the same, you know, of out of pocket and
still going up hundreds of dollars from where you were.
So if the plan is that I have to cancel entirely, my doctor has my back on that of how I can, it's actually cheaper for me to get my medication out of pocket.
Oh, wow.
And have no insurance, but it would be about like $200 to $300 a month just to be medicated and have zero backup health insurance for anything else. That's insane to me. But that's kind of the plan, is that, you know, I'm going to be out of a job here in 2 months. And at the very least, I can stay, be on my medication and stay healthy that way.
Well, best of luck to you, and thank you so much for being here, for sharing your story. That's Rebecca George of Volumes Book Cafe in Wicker Park. We've also been speaking with Crystal Abel from the Illinois Alliance for Retired Americans. Thank you, Crystal. Turn now to the big headlines of the day. At the table to help me break down the stories, Claire Lane, WBEZ morning news anchor, Chicago Sun-Times breaking news reporter Mohammed Samra, and Sun-Times consumer investigations watchdog reporter Stephanie Zimmerman. One story that hit close to home for us was our power went out. Claire talks a little bit about what happened.
We went from light to dark in a matter of seconds, and we took our generators as far as we could. So if you tuned in yesterday and you were hearing Mary and Pat, and then all of a sudden it was the BBC, we lost power.
Yeah,
it
we hope you liked the BBC.
At least we were keeping you informed, but now we're doing it locally.
Yeah, now we can get back into some local stories, right? So Claire, let's talk about the alternate budget that's making its way through city council. Of course, the mayor introduced his own plan, as mayors do. A few weeks ago, it did not go over so well, and now a group of conservative and moderate Democratic aldermen have come together and said, hey, we have a better plan. That was talked about in city council yesterday. What do we know?
So they've introduced their own revenue package, the latest update in this ongoing budget stalemate between mayors and alders. Essentially, the big sticking point is the corporate head tax. The opponents want to instead raise the city's liquor tax. They want to increase a garbage collection fee. And though they did lessen that fee spike in their formal plan, they also are willing to do some talking here. So they've scheduled 5 city council meetings, all slated for next week in the hopes of passing a budget before this December 31st deadline.
Yeah, and the mayor had changed his corporate head tax just in the last few days to try to appeal to some of these aldermen. It sounds like that did not go over so well. They just really do not like the idea of charging large companies a fee every month for every employee. We know there's a December 31st deadline, of course. What's going to happen? Are we going to end up with a government shutdown here in Chicago?
Right. So we were talking with WBEZ's city politics reporter Mariah Wolfel about this yesterday. I mean, it's certainly possible that there could be a government shutdown, but to her recollection, it's her beat. She says this has not happened in modern history. So, you know, people won't be getting paid. We just saw this with the federal government shutdown. Obviously, Chicago's not going to be happy about that, right? So there's a big incentive for city council alders to pass something to prevent sort of an uprising of very angry city workers. But regardless, this is kind of interesting, Dan, regardless of how the budget stalemate ends, the city's bond rating, because of this stalemate, this political standoff has threatened a city government shutdown. It's enough on its own to trigger this bond rating to drop to near junk status.
Yeah.
So that's going to happen no matter what.
Yeah,
but the government shutdown,
never good
unlikely.
For the bond rating to go down. It causes us to have to pay more when borrowing, right?
Exactly.
And paying back those larger loans. So we'll have to see what happens with that. Mohammed, you've been following a little bit in city council what's going on with a proposal to ban hemp. Sounds like that was brought up yesterday, but maybe didn't go anywhere. What happened exactly?
Yeah, so that push didn't go to a final vote because of a delay that was put forward by alderpersons Rosana Rodriguez-Sanchez and Byron Cicho-Lopez. And just for a little bit of context, there was a federal ban that was included in legislation that reopened the U.S. government. And if this ordinance were to pass, it would outlaw hemp products in Chicago before that federal ban goes into effect next year.
Yeah. And Stephanie, I know you've done quite a bit of reporting on legal marijuana. Hemp is not legal marijuana. I just want to put that out there. These are two different things, right, Mohammed?
Mm.
Yeah. Stephanie, let's talk a little bit about Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. He's the U.S. rep from the Northwest suburbs. He's running for U.S. Senate to replace Dick Durbin, who's been there for 36 years, maybe, is how long it is? A century. Raja Krishnamoorthy criticized recently for taking money from folks linked to the MAGA movement, but now he's giving some of that back. So what is the latest here?
Yeah, and that was that investigation in the Sun-Times by Tina Spondelis that found that Krishnamoorthy, over the past several years, has accepted more than $90,000 from donors who also support Trump and the MAGA movement. And one of those donors was Shyam Sankar, who's the chief technology officer of Palantir. And he gave, since 2015, he gave $29,300 to Krishnamoorthy's campaign. And Palantir, the company, is controversial because they are an ICE contractor. They have a contract with ICE for $30 million. And so on Wednesday, after this reporting, and there was this ensuing, back and forth with people criticizing him for this, Krishnamoorthy's Senate campaign announced that he had donated the entire $29,300 to some immigrant rights groups to try to make it right.
Yeah, do we know which groups are benefiting there, or what exactly this will go to fund?
No, the campaign didn't say which groups, and it should be noted that they said that the $29,300 represents a really tiny amount of all the money he's raised. They also said that he would continue to fight against fight to hold Trump and ICE and DHS accountable for what they've been doing in the Chicago area. No specifics, but they said it was going to go for immigrant rights.
Yeah, and Raja Krishnamoorthy, known to be a very big fundraiser. I think he's outraised the other main candidates. He's one of the front runners in this race. What are his opponents saying right now?
Yeah, his opponents had plenty to say about this. Lieutenant Governor Julia Stratton, she gathered more than 50 prominent Democrats on a letter criticizing him for taking this money and keeping this money. And after he said that he would donate the money from Shyam Sankar to these immigrant rights groups, the Stratton campaign said that he should go back and revisit some of the other donations that he's gotten from backers of Trump and MAGA.
Now, Claire, the family of slain Chicago police officer Crystal Rivera filed a wrongful death lawsuit yesterday against the Chicago Police Department and a CPD partner. What are they alleging?
Right. So her partner, this is Officer Carlos Baker, Rivera's family is alleging that he was struggling to accept her decision, meaning Crystal, to end their romantic relationship when he shot her in the back while responding to that call that we all know very well back in June that ended up costing her her life. So Rivera's mother says in the lawsuit that Baker should have never been a cop, also, given his lengthy disciplinary history record and her daughter's warnings, I guess, to supervisors that he had been reckless on the job in the past.
Yeah, and this was a pretty big revelation, and it's on the front page of the Sun-Times this morning. I hope everyone will go read more about this story. What is the reaction from CPD, from the Chicago Police Department, to this lawsuit?
Not much at this point. The police department had previously simply just described the shooting as a tragic accident. But Baker's attorney didn't respond to any requests for comment yesterday from the Sun-Times. Neither did the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, which is investigating the shooting. Also, the police department did not offer up any comment outright yesterday. So the Sun-Times report this lawsuit was filed yesterday in Cook County Court. So this is just day two.
Yeah. Certainly we'll be following this one. I'm sure we'll have many more updates here on the Daily News Update and throughout the day on WBEZ and in the Sun-Times, of course. Now, Mohammed, sticking with Chicago police, police did fatally shoot a man on Tuesday night. This was in the Westridge neighborhood on the far north side. What do we know about this police shooting?
So this had stemmed from an investigation that was taking place regarding a parked stolen SUV that was in the area. Not immediately clear where officers were when a dark vehicle had pulled up to that BMW and two suspects had gotten out and tried to get into the BMW. Officers had approached them. One of the men had fled and another one tried to get back into the vehicle that had pulled up to get away. disobeyed commands from an officer to leave the vehicle. The vehicle had taken off, dragged an officer with alongside him, and the officer had discharged his weapon and struck a 20-year-old man who was in the driver's seat of that vehicle in his head. He's taken to Illinois Masonic Medical Center. He was pronounced dead. A woman who was in the vehicle was taken into custody, and two weapons were also recovered from the scene.
Okay. And Claire had just mentioned the Civilian Office of Police Accountability. This is the group that looks into police shootings, other potential misconduct. Is COPA looking into this case yet, or what's the timeline on that?
Yeah, they're looking into this case, and usually what happens with police shootings is any officers who are involved will go on routine administrative duties for at least 30 days. And this is part of a string of shootings where CPD officers this year have outpaced last year's total, where 20 people have been shot by police officers compared to last year's 12, according to data that was provided by the Civilian Office of Police Accountability.
Yeah, and we're coming up to the end of the year here, so we usually will have, you know, the latest data to share in the beginning of the year about what happened with a lot of these different shootings, number of homicides in Chicago, number of police shootings, so we'll be sure to share those. Now, Stephanie, you have a story out now about property taxes in Cook County, always a hot topic.
Yes.
And this is a case that affects more than 1,700 homeowners. So tell us just the main takeaways of what you found.
Right. On Monday, a federal judge in Chicago ruled the way Cook County conducts its tax sales of properties that are behind in property taxes is unconstitutional.
Yeah. And tell me more about tax sales. Just break that down for listeners. What exactly is a tax sale? How often does this happen?
Yeah, it's a super weird thing, and Illinois is very unusual in how it does this. So when homeowners fall behind on their property taxes, the county can go to court and get a judgment and an order of sale against the property to make sure that the taxes, the interest, the penalties, all that stuff gets paid. And what happens at the tax sale is that investors swoop in and they compete to pay those back taxes and all that other stuff, the interest and penalties, to the county. Then the homeowner has 2.5 years to pay the money back and get current on their taxes. But if they don't, that tax buyer can go to court and get a deed and get the whole property free and clear. And when that happens, the homeowner loses all of their equity in the property. And what's happened over time is that there's been this massive transfer of wealth from many black and brown neighborhoods, majority neighborhoods, to outside investors.
Mm-hmm. And we know that Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas was named in this suit. She's actually running for mayor. Just wanted to put that out there. Is there anything you can tell us about what her role in this would have been?
So she was the defendant in the lawsuit. She didn't comment on this ruling. And she also has, and other people have, pushed for reform of this in Springfield. So it should be said that she's out there saying that she thinks this is also not fair. And, you know, nothing has happened yet, but maybe something will happen in Springfield to correct this.
And will folks be able to recoup money? What are the potential results here?
Yeah, this is still to be determined because the judge did not say whether the county is liable. And
okay.
The county,
gotcha. They're
sort of their defense is kind of like state law just makes us do this. So there's still going to be ongoing stuff going on in court. There may be a settlement. There may be a trial to determine if the county is liable and if they are, how these homeowners should be compensated.
Okay, yet another court case we'll be keeping an eye on. Claire, what other stories are you watching? I imagine you're watching maybe snow, cold.
Yes, we are going to be having a moving disturbance of snow. Dan, it's funny you should ask. Expected to produce a few hours of light snow.
A moving disturbance of snow?
Yes.
What is that?
It's a moving disturbance of snow.
is that a technical term?
That's a technical. This is from the National Weather Service, so you can go to them with complaints about their term. We're going to have a few hours tonight of snow showers of varying degrees of wetness and, you know, of strength. Light accumulation might have a few inches by tomorrow morning. Might make for a slick commute, but this is supposed to let up by midnight. The bigger news will be when the cold kicks in, which is tomorrow night. We're going to have a low of 8.
Oh, great.
And that's going to extend through the weekend. So other stories I'm watching is Sunday's Bears game.
Yeah, right.
We're hosting the Browns at noon, and it could be, you know, one of those games where people's stop feeling their fingers.
Yeah.
Players included.
Okay.
Yeah, I think if we're looking at the history, it will be among the coldest in the franchise history, coldest games. At only the 11th game played at Soldier Field in single-digit temperatures. So if you're going, it's a long Johns County game.
Yeah, I think that game at Lambeau Field the other day was around 10 or 12 degrees, so it might be even colder than that.
It might be even colder than that. I won't be there.
Okay. Sounds good. Mohammed, before we wrap up here, you were out in Little Village yesterday for a moment of positivity with the community. This is a community and neighborhood that's been, especially over the last few months, just hit by Operation Midway Blitz, with a lot of aggressive immigration enforcement. What was going on in Little Village yesterday?
So there was a procession that was taking place involving hundreds of Catholics who were walking down 26th Street to mark the beginning of Our Lady of Guadalupe festivities.
Yeah. And can you describe the scene a little bit? I know there's often, you know, thousands of people coming through the streets, carrying things and just celebrating.
Yeah, there were a lot of children. They were coming from Epiphany Catholic School. So they were walking down 26th, and it was a lot of children with their parents, loved ones, guardians, a lot of joy, a lot of celebration, which is a contrast to what we've been seeing in the neighborhood over the last few months with Operation Midway Blitz, especially near that 26th Street area.
Yeah, that's good to hear. We'll have to leave it there. We've been speaking with WBEZ's Claire Lane and Stephanie Zimmerman and Mohammed Samra of the Sun-Times.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yason, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/intheloop. Thanks for listening.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue, as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely